We're doing Pirkei Avot with the Jewish home, and we're up to the third Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. Antigone Yisocho Kibel Mishimon HaTzadik. Antigone, who was the important man, the leader of the city Socho, he received his tradition from Shimon HaTzadik. Who Haya Omer used to say, Al Tiyuk Avadim HaMshamshim Metarav Al Menat Lekabel Pras. When you do mitzvos, don't do it for the sake of a prize. When you do the will of Hashem, do it without the intention of getting a prize. You have to do it because Hashem wants it and you fear heaven. So our sages say that Antigone had two students named Tzadok and Baitus, and they heard this Mishnah and they said, why would the rabbi be telling us this, not to do it for the sake of a reward? Must be we're never getting a reward. We're never getting a reward. We're not into this. Forget it. And they developed two cults that were very focused on asceticism, and they focused on, let's make the best of life now. Not asceticism, the other way. Epicureanism. They said, let's enjoy life now. Because we're not, there is no world to come. And they took this excuse, and they developed their cults, and their cults amassed a huge following. They would use the finest vessels, wear the finest clothes, and take time to focus on just enjoying life to its fullest. And they denied the oral tradition. They decided that their cult will observe the Torah the way they see fit. And their cults had a tremendous following. It's a lot of fun to just enjoy life and enjoy life and enjoy life and still say, we're keeping the Torah. What do the rabbis know? And our sages say that Antigonos made a mistake. When we work in this world, we do need to feel like we're getting a reward. By the way, Antigonus didn't say there is no reward. He said, don't do it for the sake of reward. His students misinterpreted that to mean there must not be a reward coming. That's not what he said. Oh, he said that should not be your focus. But our sages say that even that was too much for them. Even big people need to feel like they're working for a reward. And this leads us to a tremendous concept within marriage. Story time. There was once a girl whose father wanted her to marry someone who was learned, someone who was focused on learning Torah. And she kept saying, Dad, I want to marry someone who plays ball. I want to marry someone who's cool. And her father, who was a very learned person, kept saying, I'll look for someone like that for you. And he kept setting her up with guys who were always learning Torah. And then one day, one of these young men who she got set up with calls her up and he says, you know, your father set us up. She says, yes, I know. And he says, where would you like the first date to be? And she says, where do you want? And he says, maybe we'll go to a Mets game. So she says, you're on. They go to a Mets game. And she's having the time of her life. Finally, a guy who's into baseball, a guy who's into other things, happens to be, he was also into learning Torah. But in his off time, he knew how to have a good time. So they went hiking and they went to baseball games. And the guy learned so much Torah every single day. They're married now. They're grandparents already. But she was only willing to marry him because he was the guy who was into baseball, who took her on a date to a baseball game. So, true story, by the way. It's like, these people are alive. They're, like I said, they're grandparents already. One time, there was a discussion between two rabbis. And they were discussing what's the better course a person should take. If a person marries a wife who's very happy with him learning Torah because all her life she's been saying, I want to marry a husband who learns Torah. Is that the better route? Or is it better if she's like this girl who says, I don't want a guy who's learning Torah, I want a guy who's cool. And then when she finds the guy who's cool, she says, for him, I'll do anything. Let him go learn all day. He's cool. So their conclusion was that you never know. Because much of marriage we do because we're dedicated to the other person. We like to think that our principles are the guiding force. And to some degree, that's also true. Our principles are the guiding force. I often say, people sometimes ask, is it okay if I date a girl who's not observant? But we like one another, and then she's willing to keep Torah after we get married. She's willing to keep mitzvot. And I'm not a fan of that, because I say marriage has its ups and marriage has its downs, and you don't want a situation where when she's upset at you, she says, Now I'm going to make lasagna in the fleishik pot. So there, you know, I'm going to put cottage cheese in the fleishik pot. You don't like it, don't eat it. You don't want a situation where the religion is a source. She's only observant because she loves you. There has to be a basis where she has her values, you have your values, and you match on that. It can't be that for you she's going to keep the Torah. That can't. I don't believe that can work. But sometimes people are frustrated because they feel like, she's only doing this for me. Shouldn't she be doing this for more altruistic reasons? And the answer is not necessarily. We're all driven by the pras that the Mishnah says. Even great students of Antigonos, when they were told, do it for altruistic reasons, they couldn't hack it. And the Rambam says that teaches us a rule in human nature. We are driven by reward, and we are driven by things that are not altruistic. So very often we like to tell ourselves, we're doing this for altruistic reasons. And you have to wonder if that's real. I'll take a simple example from our daily lives. When you come to a yeshiva of people who are chozrim b'tshuva, so there's a certain challenge because everyone who comes to this yeshiva has a tremendous personality. You don't come here unless you've overcome many hurdles and you've dealt with challenges and your friends are all telling you you're weird and your family's saying, why are you doing that? And you have to overcome a lot of social pressure because I don't know if there's ever a student who comes to Mechon Meir who doesn't have at least 80 to 90%, if not more, of the people he knows who do not take the path he's taking. And a person has to be willing to say, I think this is right and I'm doing it. You look around you, you should know you're sitting in a classroom with a lot of people who have a lot of inner fortitude. People who are willing to do what's right, even if their parent, their siblings, their friends, their society is not so approving of the move they're making when they come to learn Torah. So that's a very strong quality. But when you come into the yeshiva, so then you're trying to learn a tradition. And that strong, same quality can stand in the way. So a guy comes to yeshiva, and he says, gee, I learned you're not supposed to eat meat and milk together. So maybe when I brush my teeth, I shouldn't use the same toothbrush for meat and milk. So he gets a fleishik toothbrush and a milk toothbrush. And then he says, I should have a parv toothbrush too. Sometimes I'm not milchik or fleishik. So he gets a parv toothbrush. Oh, this is a true story. Oh boy, is this a true story. One time we were learning halachos, and I mentioned that when you shower, you don't wear a yarmulke. And the whole class looks at me like a weirdo. You don't wear a yarmulke when you shower? I said, no. They said, why don't you wear a yarmulke when you shower? I said, you don't have to wear a yarmulke when you shower. Turns out that one guy decided that he wants to be more observant, if we'll use that term. And he started wearing a yarmulke to the shower. So the next guy said, gee, that sounds right. Okay, I'll also wear a yarmulke to the shower. Before you know it, half the dorm is wearing yarmulkes to the shower. I don't know about tzitzit. So I'm saying there's a challenge when people are individuals and each one has inner fortitude. So if a person has his convictions, sometimes it's difficult for a person to say, I have to realize there's a tradition, I'm not inventing the wheel, I came here to a system I'm going to respect, I'm going to learn from it. It's difficult because that same strength that brings a person to Mechon Meir can sometimes stand in his way. So very often you'll notice, almost every year this happens, that someone decides they're going to wear a big black hat and a long black coat, and there's another guy decides he's wearing a talis for all of the davening, even though no one else does, and a third guy decides he's donning tefillin for all day because no one else does. And it stems from a good place. It stems from the fact that a person really wants to connect in a special way, but a person also has to ask himself, how much of my doing things this way is really my trying. I'm trying to forge my self-identity. I don't want to be like everyone else. Everyone else does this. I want to do one more. How much of it is because I want to serve Hashem, and how much of it is because I want to serve me? And in marriage, we tend to be blinded. Very often we can take the religious aspect of things and use them as a tool to try and get our own way. And let's take an example. A guy wants to daven at the 9 o'clock minyan Shabbos morning. He wants to sleep late. So his wife is going to say, you know, it It's really difficult because the kids are hungry and they want to eat. And if I feed them before you come, so then by the time you come, they're not into having the meal with you. And a Shabbos meal should be the whole family sitting together. So he's not going to tell her, look, I want to sleep late. It's Shabbos morning. He comes and he opens up a Shulchan Aruch and he says, lady, the Ramah says here, you daven late on Shabbos morning. So if all week long I daven at 8, it's only logical I should daven at 9. You don't want me to keep the Shulchan Aruch? Come on. I'm trying to be observant. I'm trying to be orthodox. I'm trying to adhere to what it says. For you, yeah, you know, I'm willing to do anything, but it does say that you should daven late Shabbos morning. So what's he doing? And we all do this, but we have to see through it. He's trying to take it and use it for himself. And that's not fair. That's really not fair. So on the one end, it's difficult for us to be altruistic, maybe even impossible for a person to be totally l'shem shamayim. I'm doing this really only for the sake of heaven. And if we have that expectation of ourselves or of our spouses, we might be disappointed. The Mishnah says we all work with ulterior motives. So that's true. It's a part of life. On the other hand, we have to demand of ourselves to be truthful to ourselves. What are our ulterior motives? And maybe it's not fair to say something in the name of the Torah when it's really my own personal interest. We find in Tanakh that our sages were very careful to put their own interests on the table first. The greatest example of that is Yaakov Avinu's conversation with his wives. He comes to them and he says, your father ain't looking at me the way he used to. I've been working really hard and he's tried to trick me every step of the way. And now the situation doesn't seem so good. And God's told me it's time to go back. So his wives answer him, you kidding? We've been having it so tough with our father. He treats us like foreigners. He doesn't treat us like daughters. He's every step of the way. He's trying to take from us, not give to us. That's a behavior of a father. That's not a way to live. Of course you should listen to God. What's going on here? Yaakov begins by saying all his personal interests. And then he says, and God said so. They begin by answering him all their personal interest, and then they say, of course you should listen to God. We would expect the matriarchs, we would expect that the conversation should be one-liners. God said so, and they answer, I do. Right? What else is there to discuss? So Rabbi Feinstein says, from this conversation, you learn how honest people deal. Honest people, even when they're God-fearing people, honest people step forward and say, my partiality is here. My interest is here. Let's be honest. This is my partiality and personal interest. And here's what Hashem said, which happens to match my partiality and self-interest. So what do the wives answer? Our partiality is also in that direction. Here, look, we have a vested interest in the same direction. And God said so, of course we should listen. But they're being honest. They're putting their interest on the table.
So
first,
what's the lesson from that? Be honest before you...
Be honest.
Are you saying that intention is before halacha, or halacha is before intention?
We strive to decide based on halacha. But when our decision affects someone else, we should be honest and come and say, look, my partiality is this. I'm not sure if my drive is primarily my partiality or the halacha. I strive to make it the halacha, but I will be honest. I do have a preference in this direction. We put it on the table, and then we can both deal. We have.
Can you just explain? Like, I want to know, like, what's more important, shalom bayit, or like what you're talking about, like the nitty gritty, little tiny mitzvot? You know, like I was reading today in the Shulchan Aruch that it says that, you know, that it can be anything. There are so many tiny little mitzvot that, like, it's an additional mitzvah to like the wicks of the Shabbos candles before Shabbat goes in. But, you know, if your wife's like, I really need you to help me do this, and you're like, well, I'm not going to do it because I need to light the wicks of the candles and all that. As in, what I'm saying is that what's more important? The, like, can we, is some, like, how do you quantify and order all of the stuff you're saying? Like, what's, when does something become, okay, you're being an idiot for a second and you should?
I think, two things. I think, the more you learn, the more you understand what weight to give each thing. Right. And then you'll understand which things do you draw a line by and you say, this is what I got to do. And which things do you say, I could forgo it. I Shalom Bayit comes first. Now, Halacha does discuss that. And also in our class, we will have many examples. But it's more your general knowledge. It's more understanding the weight, what's biblical, what's rabbinic, what's a custom.
So it's wisdom is the answer.
It's understanding. It's the more you understand, yes. So what we learned today is that we shouldn't do things for the sake of the prize. On the other hand, we discussed that Maimonides points out and our sages point out that we do things for the prize. And so we shouldn't be surprised if our spouse is not as altruistic as we think they should be. A guy once came in and said, I want you to talk to my wife. They came in as a couple. I don't remember if he was with her or without her. And he said, my wife does not like the laws of family purity. She's not fond of that mitzvah. The laws of family purity, that you have 12 or 14 days a month where you don't touch, where the beds are separate, and then she has to do all these preparations and go to mikveh. She doesn't like this. So I said to him, I'm sorry, but I think that what she's saying is legitimate. We are human beings, and we would prefer, if you would ask us, we wouldn't have chosen this mitzvah. Hashem told us this is what's right for us. But you're asking me, is it pleasant? Is it fun? We can understand philosophically. We can understand why it's good for us. And in the long run, it's been proven scientifically that it builds the family structure. But go ask any guy, are you happy with this? Yeah, go ask any girl. You try to say, I'm happy to do what Hashem wants of me. But my natural instinct, it's perfectly normal and natural and correct that your wife is being honest and saying, this is not what I would have chosen. This is not fun. I don't enjoy this. The Rambam writes that too. Says there are mitzvos that are not naturally fun. And a person can say, I don't enjoy this. I'm doing this because Hashem said so, but that doesn't mean I like it. I'm happy I'm a servant in the army of Hashem. I'm happy I have the merit to live a life that's correct. That doesn't mean this mitzvah is fun. The mitzvah can be difficult. The mitzvah can be bitter. There are mitzvot that are not fun, and your wife is perfectly right. So sometimes our expectations are not even fair. Our sages say, when Antigone tried to tell his students, do things just because Hashem said so. Forget your own interest. They couldn't handle it. Even though they were big people, they were his students. We cannot expect of ourselves to overlook our own partiality. So we can use that in a positive way. We can reward ourselves when we do what's right, when we move in the right direction. So I suggest when the woman goes to mikveh, the couple should afterwards go and have a date night. Go out for dinner. You're going to go once a month. Save it for that night. Make that night special. Reward yourself. Help yourself make it into something special. I even say that when a couple is first married, I recommend the first few times that the wife has her onset, they should go out and buy a popsicle stick. Go for a walk. It helps them. It relieves the pressure, the tension that's in the air. Here, until this minute, they were able to touch one another, everything was great, and now suddenly she has her onset and the elephant's in the room. So instead of coming back home and dealing with that, go for a walk. You should know that when that happens, we go for a walk, we take a half hour, we buy each other, you go out for a cup of coffee, you buy a popsicle stick, and you alleviate the pressure. So we reward ourselves. We need that. That's what our sages said. When you come and tell someone, don't go for the prize. But I want the prize. What's wrong if I want the prize? When your kid tells you, I want to go learn because they give out good nash afterwards. Some parents get all upset. They say, it's such a big mitzvah. You should be doing it for the mitzvah. That's wrong. He's a child. He wants the candy. And that's normal. It's fine. He should want the candy. And maybe you have to think about when you go learning with your kid, you should prepare candy. You know, before Yom Tov comes, I go to the candy store and I buy 10 or 12 different types of candies. You know those stores where they sell them by weight? So I take a bag and I buy for each day of Yom Tov that I'm going to learn with the kids. They'll get a different type. You know, they have this shape jelly bean and that shape jelly bean and the shape of a fish and the shape of a worm and all those wonderful things that you don't even feel like eating once you become an adult. For the kids, it's a lot of fun. So to the kids, that means something. We need those prizes. Men need those prizes. Women need those prizes. And so Maimonides, in his intro to Pirkei Avot, focuses on this Mishnah a little bit and tells us, you want to understand human nature? Recognize that part of human nature is that we need the rewards. So what we discussed today is, number one, we strive to be altruistic. Number two, we cannot hold our spouses to such a level. We have to realize that all people need prizes. It's part of life. Number three, when we try to present our own case, we shouldn't kid ourselves or kid the other party and try to say we're doing it in the name of God, when in fact we are partial, so we should put our partiality on the table and our own interest on the table and not misuse or abuse the religion and come in the name of God or in the name of the religion and try to get our own way. And we, in passing, we also discussed that there's something to think about and something to work on, where our individualistic nature can sometimes get in our way of having growth within what we might term organized religion. There's a system. And you guys all laughed when you heard about certain examples. I could give you many more examples of not only toothbrush and wearing a yarmulke, but there are other things. And it's a yearning for self-expression, which is fine. We have to find the direction, the venue to express it. And the more modest and the more personal, the more real it's going to be. When I need everyone else to see me wearing tefillin all day, so then I have to wonder, how much of it am I doing because I'm the servant of Hashem, and how much of it am I doing because I want people to see me being the servant of Hashem, and so on and so forth. I'm saying in general, in the performance of mitzvot, we have a rule. The more real it is, the less I need other people to see it. And when a person's looking for self-expression, a person should look for it in the realm that's very personal between him and his Creator. Imagine a person who takes his time and benches, says Birkat HaMazon with real intent. That's impressive. It's not so easy. But then you have to ask yourself, am I doing it because I actually enjoy having everyone leave the lunchroom and see me stay last? It's a balancing act. Like I said,
you do that and not do it at all.
Agreed. And there's an element
where I could reach that level.
There's an element where we always need a certain reward. It's a balancing act. Tov.